You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Michael Douglas may have been born in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and begun his film career as a gopher on the set of Spartacus, but he's done rather well for himself in the 40 years since as an actor and as a producer. In his latest movie, King of California, Mr. Douglas plays a man who tries to reconnect with his daughter after he's released from a mental institution. It premiered at this year's Sundance Film Festival and was shown at the Toronto International Film Festival this past Monday. It's opening in New York a week from today at the Lincoln Square and the Angelica, and it brings Michael Douglas to my show today. Hello.
Well, Leonard, nice to be here.
Charles, the character you play is a dysfunctional father and a former bass player who returns home after spending 2 years at a mental institution and hopes to enlist his teenage daughter, played marvelous, by the way, by Evan Rachel Wood, to join him in a search for an ancient treasure that's been left behind by Spanish missionaries. And you play this part as though he may be crazy, he may not be crazy. People are saying the guy's schizophrenic, but I suspect you didn't think of him that way.
Mania takes you on a lot of different paths. So I think he definitely had illusions of grandeur and was, as the movie starts, had been put away in a hospital for a couple of years, and through the wonderful technologies of internet, was able to get online in the hospital and begin this pursuit of this, what he believes is a Spanish treasure that the conquistadors had left behind in Southern California many years ago. And when he gets out, the story really begins with trying to persuade his daughter, played by Evan Rachel Wood, that this is not another one of his manic, crazy, over-the-top plans.
Although she's not yet 18, she's the responsible one in this family. You said that it's fun playing crazies. The only thing you have to look out for is going too far over the top.
Yeah, you have to look out for chewing up the scenery. And Mania is great for energy, but audiences can get tired of somebody running at 10,000 RPMs. So, you know, I'm used to doing pictures where I'm in pretty much every scene, and I work with the directors. In this case, it was a first-time director, Mike Cahill, screenwriter, before, and you sort of orchestrate and modulate your performance. Because when you have only a 31-day shooting schedule, you really don't have a lot of time to be looking at the monitors and evaluate your last take. You just kind of go for it and trust the instincts that got you there.
This is not one of those big films. This is a chance for you to show off your acting chops.
Exactly. At this point in my life, it's tough to get me out of the house. I'm enjoying my new bride of 7 years and our two children. So King of California was a chance to show off a little bit in the acting area.
This guy is broken down, the opposite of a romantic lead, and I suspect that the leading man roles change when you're past 60, even if you look as good as you do.
Well, thank you. No, they do. The roles change, and I've always tried to, you know, kind of mix it up and not be typecast in one sense, but this one, particularly with the enormous beard that I carried around, which was real, and put a lot of pressure on my wife, who said that I reminded her of the Unabomber for most of the time when I had it.
Not like your father when he was in Lust for Life.
Right. No, it's much, much better.
But when you get past a certain age, I assume, you start turning down the action pictures. You've said that when you were in action sequences during the filming of The Sentinel, Eva Longoria ran past you in high heels.
It's absolutely true. I knew I was in trouble on The Sentinel, and not only did she pass me in her high heels, but she turned out to be a fabulous shot. We were doing weapons training before the picture and decided we were using live ammunition just to give it a little more sobriety. And she is an incredible shot. Turns out that she grew up in San Antonio on a ranch, so she's been shooting all her life.
You mentioned that this is a first-time director. He is a writer. He's published novels, but he did go to film school. In fact, he went to film school with Alexander Payne. Still, aren't you taking a chance when you make a film with somebody who's really never done it before?
You do. Alexander Payne was one of the producers, so I felt and hoped that they would help guide. But you're particularly nervous in a case where Mike Cahill also wrote the screenplay.
That's always scary. He's not a great auteurist yet.
And, you know, you're thinking maybe he's got such a locked-in vision of how the picture should be. But that's why, in this case, a short shooting schedule benefits you, because you don't have time to think. And so it kind of takes on a momentum of its own. And he turned out to be quite receptive and quite open. And I'm really happy with how the picture turned out.
Your character is convinced that the treasures are buried beneath the concrete floor of a nearby Costco. It's probably the first time in history that someone proposed looking for something under a Costco store. Although I was thinking the gold is probably only available in king-sized ingots if it's in Costco. But you really shot it at a Costco, didn't you?
We did. We shot for a week in a Costco. The King of California sort of talks about the urbanizations and what's happened. It has a lot of themes of Man of La Mancha, the Don Quixote story, Miranda. My daughter is almost like the Sancho Panza as we pursue this. And we were in a Costco for a week at night, because obviously they were open during the days and it doesn't really matter because there's no windows. And so we continued, and I became quite a fan as I walked the aisles between shots and saw the amazing amount of merchandise they've gotten there, and sometimes bored and would come back home after a night shooting at 8 o'clock in the morning with loads of, I don't know what, Hawaiian drinks that nobody's ever seen before, things like that.
My guest is Michael Douglas, whose latest film is called King of California. It opens next week at the Lincoln Square and the Angelica a week from today. You live in New York part-time, but are you going off somewhere? Is that why we're doing this today rather than next week?
I am. I'm on the way. I grew up in New York. A lot of people think because of my father that I grew up in Los Angeles, but I grew up in New York.
Well, you were born in New Brunswick, New Jersey. How did that happen?
Well, that was an interesting scenario. My mother and father were actors living in Greenwich Village, and my mother's older sister, Ruth, married Seward Johnson, the founder of Johnson & Johnson. And so on weekends, going from the cramped little Greenwich Village apartment, they would go out to visit her sister Ruth out at their beautiful estate in New Brunswick. And I happened to come a little early that weekend, and then I was therefore born out in New Brunswick, New Jersey.
I interrupted you when you were explaining what was happening here.
Well, then we're going to the Toronto Film Festival with King of California on Monday. It's going to be shown there. And we live now most of the time in Bermuda, the island of Bermuda, where my mother was from and grew up. And when I was growing up here in New York, would spend summers and holidays down in Bermuda with my relatives. I got a big family down there, and we enjoy it a lot. And of course, for Catherine, they drive on the left side of the road in the Queen, so she feels quite at home.
Now, this film also played at the festival at Deauville, France, mm-hmm. didn't it? Is that where it premiered?
The first premiere was at Sundance. Mm-hmm. And then I just came back, and they were very nice, and the Deauville Film Festival gave me an homage, you know, sort of a history of my career, and King of California was the opening night picture.
Is that the first time a father and a son have both been honored at Deauville? Because I know your father also was honored earlier.
It was. I was certain you reached that age where you're sure you're much too young for lifetime career achievements, and then I was reminded that my father was about 2 years younger than I was 30 years ago when he got this award. But also Deauville means a lot to me because it was where I met Catherine Zeta-Jones, my wife, 9 years ago when I was promoting Perfect Murder, and she was there with Zorro.
And the French have honored you in the past. They awarded you the Order of Arts and Letters in 1998. So are you like Jerry Lewis to the French?
Well, the Douglas, the French have been very kind to the Douglas family. My father speaks French. My stepmother Anne is French, and he speaks French. My French is pretty good. But the French have always had a great enjoyment for movies, a joy for movies. And the Deauville Film Festival is a festival only for American films. And I think it's the only film festival in the world that acknowledges and honors movies from another country. And it's a great spot. It's up on the English Channel and kind of reminds you what great allies the French are and what good friends. Sometimes current politics get in the way. And then besides that, you get a chance to go up to Omaha Beach. And there's a fantastic museum in Normandy honoring and explaining, you know, from the World War II and the invasions that happened. It's quite extraordinary with a movie that they show that was filmed both from the Allies side and the German side at Omaha Beach.
You're one of those actors who is more than just an actor. You really do think about what's going on in the world to the point where you have made political commitments. You've also you appeared at the you and your wife were presenters at the Nobel Peace Prize concert in Oslo, weren't you? So do you feel that you should make that kind of commitment, use your celebrity in that way?
Well, I think everyone's responsibility is to, while they're alive, is to bring more to this planet than they take away. I've been fortunate to be appointed as a United Nations Messenger of Peace by Secretary General Annan in 1999. And there's five of us. Unfortunately, we just lost one. Luciano Pavarotti was one of the messengers of peace, but Elie Wiesel and Jane Goodall and Yo-Yo Ma are the others. And I focus kind of in the area of disarmament, which kind of came about from my experiences with the China Syndrome, a picture I did in, 78?
Which you produced as well.
Which I produced as well. And so I work at trying to have the U.S. live up to its financial responsibilities to the United Nations and then kind of have access worldwide to talk with politicians and diplomats about the reduction of nuclear weapons, which I must say I'm really optimistic about. For the first time in 25 years, you're beginning to see a real consensus between the right, Henry Kissinger, George Shultz, speaking out, and a lot of other countries. And I'm hoping with the upcoming elections, this will be an issue, and we can see a dramatic reduction of our nuclear arsenal, along with our other countries that have those weapons.
My guest is Michael Douglas. His latest film is called King of California, and it opens a week from today at the Lincoln Square and the Angelica. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Michael Douglas, who is one of our most popular film stars, but also one of our most successful producers. His latest film, which he has not produced, is called King of California, and it opens a week from today at the Lincoln Square and the Angelica. And how do you decide what films to produce?
It's always the same, whether it's producing or acting. It's the material, the script. Do I think it would be a good movie? My early productions...
Well, you started off at the top, didn't you?
Well, I was blessed with One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which I had never even thought about being a producer. It was simply that my father had originally had the rights, had come back to Broadway in 1960, at sort of the height of his career, to do this play, which was not very successful, and then tried to get it made as a movie, and then ultimately was going to sell it. And I was early in my career and sort of had a lull, had read One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest in college. It was required, you know, 20th century lit reading. And said, please, let me try to see if I can get this project set up. And it took about 6 years. And then that interim, I did The Streets of San Francisco and then left the show after 4 years to produce Cuckoo's Nest. And, yes, we won the big five Oscars, and my life changed.
Five Oscars, the first time a film won one since 1934, with It Happened One Night. But it, part of the reason the film was so successful, beyond the fact that it was beautifully written, was that Milos Forman directed, and you put together a great cast. Were you tempted to put yourself into that cast?
I was. There was the part of Billy Bibbit that was brilliantly played by Brad Dourif, and I remember thinking I would sort of suggest it, and then Brad came in, and he was so brilliant, I didn't think about it, and I'm glad because I certainly had my hands full as a first production.
What were you doing then? I mean, other than choosing, you chose Milos Forman, I assume.
Yes, we chose Milos Forman. We worked through choosing the cast. I'm saying we as my partner Saul Zantz, and I was fortunate because The Streets of San Francisco was going on in San Francisco. And my producing partner was in Berkeley, California. So when I had any time off at all, I would go over there. But, you know, over the years, I had to work on the script and get the script in shape and find a distributor and cast and all those things that a producer does.
One of the things that has been a constant throughout your career is that you've played flawed characters in extreme situations. Is that something that appeals to you?
I guess so. It must, because I look back now and I see I've never been too analytical about the choices I've made. They've all been pretty emotional. I realize now that my entire career is contemporary movies. I really did not do any kind of period pictures, maybe one out of 30 plus. So for some reason, I've been interested in that gray area that people who try to do the right thing sometimes, and they all make mistakes and ultimately come forward, and you put them in precarious and adversarial situations, and audiences wonder, how are you going to get out of this? And I guess that's really appealed to me.
So we have Basic Instinct and the War of the Roses, Falling Down, Fatal Attraction, Wonder Boys, and every time I think any people start putting you in a little pigeonhole, you tried to break out of it.
That's true. That's true. I feel that my responsibility as somebody who's creative is to keep pushing the boundaries. And by having success, it allows you to take more chances. And I enjoy the risk factor of making pictures. I like flying without a net. I like tonally movies that you don't quite know which direction they're going to go. Falling Down is another example.
Which confused some people, although I thought it was quite good.
Yeah, I liked it. It's the nervous laughter syndrome. You know, it's funny, but there's an edge to it. I guess it's a little bit. You look back, you know, at the film noir. You know, film noir wasn't that it was so violent, but it always just had that sense that there was something that was about to happen. Even if it didn't happen, you thought it was going to happen.
In the case of this film, your latest film, King of California, the tension really is over just how crazy Charlie is, or, you know, is he really on to something? And every time we, as an audience, make a decision, he really is crazy, then he does something that suggests that maybe he isn't.
And
that's part of the fun of the film.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm glad that was the fun, was to maintain that unpredictability, to maintain a certain level of insanity, and then just when you think it's off the deep end, there's some coherence, and it takes a little bit of a balancing act. And but I find if you do a lot of your homework before you shoot. And I've always made it a process of sitting down with the director, and I learned this from Milos Forman on Cuckoo's Nest, who would sit down with us from the first day and go from page one of the script and tell us how he was thinking or what he was thinking. And you could do all of your arguing and debating at a much cheaper rate, off camera and not with a big crew around. And it helps both of you kind of close your eyes and be able to picture how the movie's going to go. And so that when you get into a picture like The King of California with a short schedule time, you're on the same path together.
What they have in common, it seems to me, Cuckoo's Nest and King of California, is that they also ask the question, just what is crazy?
Well, it's like dysfunctional.
Who are we to say
right,
somebody is crazy
exactly.
or not?
Exactly. We, you know, there's a little bit of dysfunction, I think, in all of our families. Idiosyncrasies and character flaws, as they may seem, can also create some good work.
Well, that sure was the case with Wall Street. You say that many drunken investment bankers have come up to you in restaurants over the years and said, "You are the man." And then they tell you that you inspired them to get into the business. You would have thought that you would have had the opposite effect.
I look at them, you know, my eyes get wide, and I try to remind them in their stupid state that I did go to jail. I was the bad guy, but they are seduced by those great suits and that power and really tell me, like going to Mecca, that this was the moment that got them into the business, which is a little scary.
Well, actually, it sort of suggests that people take away from any work of art what they want to take away.
Mm-hmm. And it also, I think, is one of the reasons why we enjoy villains so much on screen, or someone playing crazy like the King of California, because it allows you to get out of the social graces and social concerns, and you kind of wish as a party that wish you could do that.
Because Gordon Gekko wasn't really the key character. He wasn't the main character in that film, and yet he's the one everybody remembers.
Well, that's it.
Villains are often more interesting anyway.
And more colorful. I remind people, Charlie Sheen really carried that picture, and most of my films have been, I'm the one who kind of carries the plot line. Basic Instinct, Sharon Stone had a wonderful, wonderful part, you know. Meanwhile, somebody else has to carry the storyline. So I don't mind it, but I think it's going to be a good movie. But I do feel rewarded when you get a good part now and then.
My guest is Michael Douglas, and he got a very good part for King of California, which opens next Friday at the Lincoln Square and the Angelica. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. I understand that you've teamed up with the screenwriter of Wall Street, Stephen Schiff, to do a sequel. Is that going to happen?
Well,
Money Never Sleeps?
Money Never Sleeps. They are developing. I am not a producer on that picture. Ed Pressman is. But they are developing a screenplay based on Gordon getting out of jail. And what is his next move? So we've had some preliminary discussions before Stephen went off to write the first draft, but I haven't seen it yet.
And you have produced a bunch of films that are coming up as well, haven't you? We Own the Night, What Just Happened, and Tragic Indifference.
Those are projects all in development. Uh-huh. So I haven't actually made them into production yet, but they are in development.
Tragic Indifference is a courtroom thriller based on a true story?
Yes, it's based on the SUV Ford rollover, the Explorer, and the history of an attorney who's been fighting those cases.
Now, when you say it's in development, what holds them up? The fact that you got to get all the money together?
No, a script. It's not easy making a movie or making three acts that are dramatically exciting that hold together. And so it's not unusual. I have projects I've been working on for 5 or 6 years that I'm through my sixth or seventh, eighth draft. It just takes a long time to get a piece of material in shape.
Today, two films that have been sitting on the shelf for 3 or 4 years opened, Fierce People and Cigarettes and Romance, mm-hmm. both opened in New York. Which is another side of the business. You can even make the movie, and then if you don't get a studio behind you, it's never going to be seen. Those films didn't even go direct to DVD.
No. There's a fallacy about the independent film. Your studios all have independent divisions, Focus, Fox 2000, Warner's Independent. But although the budgets may be of an independent nature, they have the marketing clout, what we call the prints and advertising money from the major studio. So they can take a small picture and put a lot of advertising dollars behind it to give it the legs that it needs. The true independents, and the King of California is one of them, are pictures that cannot afford, and that's why in this case they're released in a limited number of theaters in New York and Los Angeles, and then 2 weeks later we'll add, hopefully with some word of mouth, because they cannot afford television ads or posters or this or that. So it's usually publicity driven and puts more pressure on the performers to kind of get out there and at no cost talk the picture up.
When you're the producer, are you the one who generally chooses the director? Because you've produced films with some pretty great director. John Woo.
Mm-hmm.
You did John Woo's first American film?
Yeah, I did Face Off.
And Francis Ford Coppola's...
Rainmaker.
The Rainmaker. Is that part of it, working with a director you've always admired?
It is, if you're lucky enough. No, producer's responsibility normally is to get the project, the script, in good enough shape that you can attract a director. And then the director and you together will try to cast the movie. So starting off, going back to Romancing the Stone, which was one of the earlier ones, and then there were pictures I produced like Starman, which actually Jeff Bridges was nominated for an Oscar.
Terrific film.
Thank you. And I would have loved to play that part, but I was not an approved actor. Because my big transition was, on one hand, I'd won the Oscar as a producer for Cuckoo's Nest, but I was still an actor trying to make the transition from television, Streets of San Francisco, into feature films. And in those days, it was not as easy. I think only maybe Steve McQueen and Clint Eastwood before me.
But Clint Eastwood had to go to Italy to establish himself as a movie star.
That's correct.
In the case of Romancing the Stone, and then Jewel of the Nile and The War of the Roses, Danny DeVito plays a part. And I read somewhere that you were roommates together when you were both starting out in New York. Is this a kind of a loyalty to an old friend?
Well, in part, but also a talented friend. No, Danny DeVito and I met in summer theater. I used to work in the summers at the Eugene O'Neill Memorial Theater in Waterford, Connecticut. They had a national playwrights conference where new plays were presented. And I had met Danny up there, and then Danny and I did. We roomed together in New York.
Roommates would never want to see each other again.
Right. Well, we were the odd couple. And then going out to California. But I understand why people like to work with friends or why actors and actresses work in pictures, because there's a familiarity. You don't have to go through that whole dance of getting to know each other. Kathleen Turner, I did both Romancing Jewel and The War of the Roses with, and as an actress, you get to know each other's rhythm, and it makes it a lot easier and more comfortable to work together.
But what happens when you're cast with somebody you've never met before? I've talked to other actors about this, and the first scene you do is a love scene. You don't know this person, and you suddenly have to have what they call chemistry.
Well, I think it's a comfort factor. I mean, film acting or any acting is about trying to be relaxed in an unrelaxed situation. And, love scenes on film are particularly so. So I've always made a tremendous effort to try to make my leading lady comfortable. And by that, one of the first things you do is you sort of talk through what you're planning on doing. So no one's taken by surprise or no one thinks there's anything lecherous involved. And having done a lot of, love scenes, you start off like someone who's learning how to dance very slowly. And, I'm going to put my hand here, then we're going to kiss, and then I'm going to put my hand here. And
so you're choreographing.
You choreograph it, and then you pick up the pace as you rehearsed it. So it gives an appearance of passion. But saying that, I've always asked why people are so fascinated about lovemaking on screen when as less so than shooting somebody. But, I always say, well, you never faked it in your life. They say, well, and that's the end of that conversation.
Although there's also the other side. In the old days, all we saw between Bacall and Humphrey Bogart was a little flirtation, mm-hmm. and then the next morning we knew that something had happened. Today we probably would have seen one of those scenes in which legs and arms dissolve for a while, so that we know for sure that right. they did it. In this film, King of California, your character has a moment, has a night with some woman,
right.
and we know it simply because we see her getting him into her car.
Right.
We don't always need to know all that other stuff.
No, we don't. I mean, I think there was a strong period in the 70s, 80s, before computer graphics and CGI and special effects took over our industry, where titillation and on the screen was something that you couldn't see it on television or at home. And I haven't seen the new Ang Lee film that's out now, which I hear it's a pretty hot film.
Well, it deserves its NC-17.
Yes, okay. But it's interesting to see that this year there are a couple of pictures that are out there that are pretty graphic.
Nun, starring Michael Douglas. In fact, his latest film is rather charming. He has a wonderfully endearing performance as Charlie, and I'm not going to tell you how it turns out, but this is an ambiguous film with an ambiguous ending. It opens next week at the Angelica in the Lincoln Square, and it has been my great pleasure to talk to Michael Douglas about King of California. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Leonard. It's a pleasure.